Good morning, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Time for Spectrum West, everybody. I'm Al Ross, back from the heat of the desert. Ah, this is much better. And if you believe that, I have a fresh truckload of snow for sale in case you don't have enough in your yard. Thanks a lot to Dean Collenbach and Tiffany Coggins for tossing together a very healthy Spectrum salad in my absence. I left in January, now it's February. The day's getting longer, sun's getting higher. Before we know it, we'll be complaining about April showers. We only wish. On today's Brunchcast, we're going to school to learn a lesson about loons and how they communicate from Lauren Wentz, a biology professor at UW-Barron County. We have a sneak preview of Saturday's Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra concert for you. Jim Oliver's here with Jake Lindgren, director of Love, Loss, and What I Wore, opening at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Friday evening, the Flambeau Valley Arts Association resumes its 42nd season with Nuns for Fun, Movie Bingo, a special show all the way from Chicago. And if all that weekend activity weren't enough, we begin with another exciting event that we hope you can fit in. It's become a February tradition, the Banbury Art Crawl, a presentation of the artistic tenants within Banbury Place, the former Uniroyal factory-turned-mall with a bit of everything. Participant and organizing collaborator Joellen Burke paid us a visit for a look at what awaits. How about Banbury itself? Is it growing in artistic tenants?
Absolutely. In Building 13, which is the main building for artists, artisans, vendors, there is an increase in people renting, and it's become kind of the epicenter of all of those buildings. The complex is vast. The green awning is the recognizable area. Food vendors, retail, children's clothing, other artists, painters. It's just a community of great art and creativity.
And for the first 4 years, 13 has been it, but this year, ta-da!
We add Building 10, right behind Building 13. The nice part about Building 10, it allows for 30 more artists, so it is a large building. Again, these are industrial buildings, but it provides space for people to set up their booths, and we have area artists and vendors in that building directly across the alley from Building 13, so it's very easily walkable. Great parking options as well.
It's labeled on the sheet in front of me, an exciting two-day event. Tell me what makes it exciting.
Oh, so many things. I think the creativity, the variety of materials and products, actually the energy created on a very cold February weekend is amazing to see people come out. I think it helps with these cold doldrum-type days. What makes it really exciting is there is quite a community of art in this building, and certainly all of Eau Claire. We're on, I think, the cusp of becoming such an epicenter for wonderful arts and services, small business combined with these arts. So as people over 3,000 walk through these booths and walk through the many variety of things, whether it's wine tasting or belly dancers or demonstrations in painting and woodworkers. I could just go on and on.
Yes, you could. And just, feel free to.
Well, it's a crawl, and that we're using the term do the crawl this year because there's momentum as people walk through the halls and enjoy this with live music and food to taste. The essence is really the art and the ability for people to actually purchase fine art in our community.
I think, given the fact that you have live music and a theme, Do the Crawl, you should commission someone to come up with a dance called The Crawl.
I thought you hesitated there a little bit because you might want to be the one to do that, Al.
Not since the 70s am I that good a dancer.
Well, we do have some really exciting dancers, and little as well as adult, and that's kind of the essence of it, the fun part.
You also have crawl bucks this year, I see.
Crawl bucks are really a way to encourage purchase of artwork. We've had many generous donors through our ECRAC site, which is called Power to Give. And through ECRAC, they're able to donate to the crawl. And in return, for depending upon the amount, they earn crawl bucks. And they serve as a way to purchase items at the crawl and redeem those for products that they purchase. And they really are used as cash. So it's our way to encourage that commerce, to encourage people to buy fine art. And I would make a plug that it couldn't be more timely in terms of Valentine's Day, a great option for people to purchase something that really has meaning.
Jo Ellen Burke with us talking about the 5th annual Banbury Art Crawl. It's Friday from 3 to 9 p.m. and Saturday from 9 to 3. Something for every age. Give us an example of something that people should feel good about bringing their kids to witness.
Well, as you probably have seen in terms of some videos that have been shared or photos on our website, which is a plug for that, banburyartcrawl.org, kids can do some things with hula hoops. We have the little ballet dancers that are usually taking their classes on Saturdays, and they're fun to watch. We have belly dancers, and we have demonstrations in painting. We have other demonstrations, but I would mention Pat Mayhew Ham, who's a legend in painting in our area. Mm-hmm. We just love her, and she's willing to put her things aside and just show people how she does what she does. Many generational things to do. We have young kids working within Forage, it's called, a new cooking spot that Trish Cummins has put together, and those kids are going to put together a fundraiser for their trips that they have planned. Mm-hmm. Things going on all day.
And the fact that you've added a building adds parking.
People are often concerned about that because of the large buildings all around Banbury. It can get a little confusing. So thanks to Volume 1, we've paired up with the local store. We have a shuttle bus. But it doesn't mean that parking isn't accessible. So there really are two options. People could park downtown, visit the local store, and then hop the bus up to the green awning on Galloway. The other option is we have a large lot behind Building 10. We'll have a lot of good signage to direct people, and they can park just within an easy walking distance to the door that takes them into the back building, Building 10, and flow through that to Building 13.
5th Annual Banbury Art Crawl, Friday the 7th, 3 to 9, Saturday the 8th, 9 to 3, Buildings 13 and 10 at Banbury Place, that is in Eau Claire. You have sponsors who have done you well.
Terrific sponsors that seem to show up for us every year, mostly Jack Kaiser. He has been so generous with Segan Properties. The Eau Claire Regional Arts Center provides us volunteers and great space on Power to Give. Avalon Floral, Leader Telegram, Volume 1. We have individuals that are just stepping up constantly to show their support as well.
And Wisconsin Public Radio. You have a board of 9 people, but it takes a lot more than just a board of 9 people to pull this off, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And the volunteers are really essential to us, whether it's these poor guys that work as the parking attendants in the cold, directing traffic. We have an elevator operator to make sure we're covering people with special needs, and it truly is a community effort.
You can see my head bobbing now because I have a tune in my head. It's an old thing called Do the Crawl.
Well, I wish people could see you starting to dance as well.
Do the Crawl, yeah. Jo Ellen, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Jo Ellen Burke, okay, you can stop looking for things to do this weekend. We're telling you about several, and the Banbury Art Crawl is hopefully on your radar. It is Friday and Saturday. Have fun. Let them know Spectrum West sent you. Coming up on Spectrum West today, the language of loons, Ladysmith Alive, and even more.
Support for WPR comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, bringing Mayo Clinic care to communities throughout western Wisconsin, with specialties such as cardiology and heart surgery. Information is on the web at mayoclinichealthsystem.org. Support also comes from the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts, presenting contemporary ballet and modern dance by the Two Dance Company, Friday, February 7th at 7:30. Tickets are available at mabeltainter.org.
Here's a Spectrum memo for you. Friday evening, the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory celebrates the opening and return of Hubcaps, an exhibit of circular vehicular artwork. The free opening reception starts at 7:30. The exhibit will be up through March 5th. Saturday evening, the State Theater at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center welcomes The Middle Child in a family of five concerts in the 2013-2014 season of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Executive Director Gordon Murphy stopped by to give us all a preview. It's American music through the years. I get an email from Nobu, so I have to bring up this Japanese song.
Absolutely.
But let's start at the beginning. Tell me about the genesis behind the title and the repertoire for this concert.
Well, there wasn't an original impulse other than we wanted to have Bob Baca in to play with us.
Okay.
He hasn't played with us for almost 10 years.
That's a good idea. He's good.
He's great. And so he's playing a wonderful Fantasy for Trumpet and Orchestra by Frank Proto. And then as we started thinking about that, we started thinking, wouldn't it be nice to have an American music theme concert? And although some people might call this a pops concert, all these tunes are actually accepted as kind of serious pieces to do by orchestras, especially the Symphonic Portrait, Irving Berlin, and then all these other tunes that are arranged in symphonic fashion. So people will be hearing themes that they know and recognize and enjoy, but they're all arranged classically in an organized fashion.
Okay. Any special accoutrements for this concert other than Bob Baca standing out in front? The configuration is the same. We don't have any surprises coming as far as percussion or anything?
Percussion will have more instruments, but nothing that different for this concert.
Now let's get to that Japanese. It's called Japanese. It's by Gershwin.
Yes.
And Nobu, in his email to me, said, I had someone come up and ask me what's up with that. And he said, I told him to just come to the concert and satisfy their curiosity about it. I thought I knew Gershwin. Japanese is new to me.
Well, it's actually a piece that was discovered in the last 15 years.
Ah.
And nobody knows when it was actually written. You know, we cannot pin it down. And in all honesty, I have not heard it. When we first scheduled it, this was something that Nobu wanted to do, and we thought, oh, that's great. And I couldn't find a recording of it easily. So while I don't think it's a Porgy and Bess level of piece, I do think it's going to be an interesting piece.
Yeah. That's something that he knows well, maybe.
Yes.
So does it have a Japanese feel to it, a flavor to it? Does it have the xylophone and the... I hate to stereotype that stuff.
Having not heard it, I do not
know.
Oh,
you don't know? Okay.
All yeah, right. I literally do not
So you and I are in the same boat, then.
Yes. I'm looking forward to the concert to hear it.
We're in the dark. And that's the way Nobu wants us, I guess.
I think so. I think it is so rarely performed. And it's going to be good to hear it.
And actually, that's a good way of thinking about, you know, the prerequisite for going to a Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra concert. Why would you want to be enlightened before the concert? You want to be enlightened during the concert.
There you go.
And afterwards. And that's usually what happens.
That's exactly right.
So the particulars of the concert are what? Time and
it'll be
place and
at the
date?
State Theater, downtown Eau Claire Street. 7:30 Saturday night, February 8th. We're looking at a good weather projection, no snow.
But you can't promise, can you?
No, I cannot promise.
And it will be chilly, but that's okay.
That's right.
Because the State Theater is going to warm up. Well, thanks for being here with that preview, and we look forward to the rest of the season as well.
Thank you, Al.
Gordon Murphy, Saturday night, 7:30, Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, State Theater, American Music Through the Years, it's called. Although, as we were talking, a tune called Japanese doesn't seem to fit, it's worth going to see just how it fits. And another very good reason for being in the audience is to see Robert Baca soloing on trumpet. You will hear music of Berlin, Gershwin, Bernstein, Goldsmith, Mancini, Williams, and more, or Bernstein. one way or the other. Details at cvsymphony.org. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along today. Next, a loon linguist, an Oliver Report, and we'll have some fun with nuns. Yes, we will. Spectrum Memo at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee, Friday, February 7th. It's Two Dance, that's T-U, Dance, at 7:30 p.m. Info at mabeltainter.org and by phone at 235-0001. The Menominee Art Music Society presents Music for Valentines, Sunday afternoon at 2 at United Methodist Church in Menominee. Our next audio fragment is one I've been looking forward to. I first read about Dr. Lauren Wentz in an announcement about a talk being given. The subject caught my eye and hooked my curiosity. Lauren Wentz is an assistant professor of biological sciences at UW Barron County. She's paid her dues and has done the work at UW Whitewater for a dozen years as a dean of arts and sciences at a college in Washington, as an auctioneer and state park naturalist. She's been captivated by, among other things, the acoustic communication of birds, and she specialized in that phenomena with loons. I read once that nature and the sounds it makes are in a certain key. I've also heard the supposition that all natural sound is in a minor key. Lauren Wentz didn't confirm nor deny either of those theories, but she did keep my ornithological attention. Well, you are an assistant professor of biological sciences, and the reason that's not simply called biology is because you also teach animal biology, anatomy, physiology, environmental science. Is that one of the things that attracted you to your vocation, the links and the interdependency between scientific disciplines, especially biological ones?
Yeah, I think so. I am probably sort of a rare example in that I knew a long, long time ago, you know, even before I went to high school, that I wanted to do something in biology. I think, you know, like every 13-year-old girl, I wanted to train dolphins at SeaWorld, which is kind of a fantasy for many people. That didn't work out, but I still stuck with the biology path, the science path, all through college and graduate school. That's what I studied and continue to study to this day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're a young person, I can remember one biology teacher. He stood out. I think you do remember the person who got you interested in science. I don't know why. Okay, so we have your background, and let's crawl out on that biological branch where sit birds.
Yes.
Tell me about that specialty and how you discovered it.
Well, I originally, when I decided to go to PhD school or to work on my doctorate, I was accepted at Ohio State, and the original plan was that I would work in the field of studying bird foraging behavior, which was fine, except that the plan was that I would be studying birds foraging for food in the dead of winter in central Ohio. And after a few months of doing that, I decided I'd rather turn my attention elsewhere. And it just so happens that Ohio State houses one of the largest collections of animal sound recordings in the world. And I became very interested in not just the collection, but, of course, the content within that collection, and decided that rather than sitting in snowy woods in central Ohio for my doctoral research, instead I could craft my own project in a location as a field biologist in a location that I've always loved, which is, of course, the North Woods of Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota. So I did that. I said, what birds live there? The first thing that came to mind was loons. And so my fate was sealed at that point.
Yeah, and, you know, I just need to throw this in. We will forgive you for being a Buckeye.
Okay, thank you.
I told you earlier that last April, after moving into a new home on a lake, I did record a loon. I'm not going to play it because as I played the ones that you and I are going to talk about momentarily, I discovered that it was a yodel.
Ah. okay.
And it was so interesting. I have a yellow lab, and when she heard this loon, she went barreling down the steps to the lake because she'd never heard anything like it. She's a bird dog, but that was new to her. The interesting thing about that, and maybe we can talk about it when we get to the yodel, but there were at least two other loons on the lake who were answering it.
Yes.
And that was pretty interesting. It gave me the notion that, you know, he was or she. The colorful ones, are they the males?
Well, it's very difficult to tell male from female. When you're watching loons, the plumage is virtually identical. About the only way you can tell the difference between the two is through the voice, and that yodel that you recorded is actually produced only by male loons.
Ah, okay.
So if you hear that sound, you know that it's a male. Otherwise, you have to peer into their intimate lives a little more. plumage is identical between males and females.
So because it was spring and a male, was he looking for love?
Either that or defending his territory.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
You've done extensive research and recording of loons. You know, one thinks of On Golden Pond when one thinks of loons, because
of
Katharine Hepburn did a wonderful impersonation of one.
Yes, I've been known to impersonate Katharine Hepburn impersonating loons. So.
Yeah, I bet you're pretty good at that.
Well, not as good as she was.
Before we listen to them, tell us a little bit about loons. Are they indigenous to certain areas? Will I only see them in the spring where I live? Or are they prehistoric? What are they?
Well, the family Gaviidae, which is the one to which our common loons belong, it's a small family. There are only 5 recognized species, and they're distributed only in the northern hemisphere. In terms of their breeding ranges, all 5 species breed in the northernmost latitudes of the northern hemisphere. Here in Wisconsin, we have only common loons during the breeding season. Occasionally, you know, very keen-eyed bird watchers will see Pacific loons or red-throated loons or yellow-billed loons, which are the other 4 North American species coming through during migration. But northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and then, of course, on up through Canada and Alaska are the breeding grounds for common loons. Although we call them common loons here, the same species is also found in Europe and the northern regions of Asia, Siberia.
Yeah, I don't like calling them just common loons, because that's like calling something usual, and I think these birds are...
It does sound plain. In Europe, the common loon is referred to as the great northern diver.
Well, there you go.
Which, you know, sort of highlights one of the things that loons do best, and that is, you know, diving in search of food. They are almost exclusively water birds. They do not venture on land except to nest and to mate. Chicks will walk overland, which is kind of a weird little twist on young loon development, but the adults are really ungainly on land. They're much better swimmers, okay flyers, but swimming is really what they do best.
Yeah. And I guess we've all seen somewhere, maybe on a calendar, the picture of an adult loon carrying a young or two.
Yeah, early in the chick-rearing period, the adults will sometimes carry the chicks on their backs. They do not fly with them on their backs. A lot of people have speculated on that, but aerodynamically, that's really not a good plan. but they do that possibly to protect the chicks from predators. There are underwater predators like muskies, you know, snapping turtles, but also probably to help them regulate their body temperature a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they have those downy feathers the first few hours out of the egg, it helps if they can keep warm by snuggling next to mom or dad and not be in the water all the time.
Lauren Wentz, Assistant Professor of Biological Sciences, UW-Barron County, our guest. Well, you were kind enough to send us 4 different examples of how loons can sound. Why don't we dive into those? I think the first one is called the wail. Do you have to set this up, or do you want me to just play it?
No, only to let your listeners know that it's W-A-I-L.
Yes.
Not as in, you know, killer whale sounds, that sort of thing. I sometimes have people ask about that.
I have about 24 seconds of it, so maybe we can just establish it, and then you can tell us a little bit about what a loon is saying when he or she is wailing.
Perfect.
Here we go. It does sound like a whale.
Yes, and it's sometimes described as the equivalent of dialing one when you make a long-distance phone call.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah, because it's not frequency modulated. It's more, it's a monotone signal with very little frequency modulation. It can travel tremendous distances. Of all of the loon calls that you're likely to hear at great distance, the whale would be the call. It's usually considered a contact call. So if one member of a loon pair, for instance, is on one lake and its mate is somewhere out of sight, the loon on the lake may wail just to say, I'm here, here I am.
Is each loon's voice that distinctive that they know which one's wailing?
Not in the case of the whale, necessarily.
Okay.
It's more by location. With the whale, it's a little difficult to pinpoint precise location, but the loons know the lay of the land, or the water, as the case may be, and can generally recognize the sound is coming from that direction. In all likelihood, that's my mate. Perhaps I should go check things out. I'm being a little anthropomorphic, but...
That's okay. We're getting it, I think. So next up is what?
The tremolo.
Okay. What is the tremolo?
The tremolo, in contrast to the whale, is frequency modulated. It's sometimes the call that people refer to as the laugh of the loon.
Okay.
Probably the one call responsible for the expression crazy as a loon. It is generally, again, a contact call, but it can be produced in duet. So a male and female pair will duet to one another using this call. And it's also one that you hear in flight. One of the ways to look for loons is to hear them as they produce this call in the air.
Well, let's listen to the tremolo, a little bit of it. Yeah, that's the one I think we've all...
Yep, and it's the one heard. That Katharine Hepburn tried to imitate, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that. So there you go. That's the tremolo.
Right.
That's another way of saying what?
Basically, I'm here. Come find me is sometimes part of that message.
Mm-hmm.
Again, frequency-modulated sounds are easier to zero in on. When members of a pair are separated from one another, it's an easier way for them to find each other. It's also one that is sometimes produced when loons are threatened, perhaps by a territorial intruder, or by the presence of someone in a boat or a potential predator. So it can also serve as an alarm call.
I see. All right, so next is the yodel. It's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you want to set up about the yodel before we hear it?
Well, in the case of the yodel, it's the one loon call that I can't imitate because, well, unfortunately, it's produced only by male loons. And it is one that carries a signature with it. In the case of the yodel, each adult male loon in a given population has his own vocal signature so that other loons can recognize one male loon from the other. And lucky for loon researchers, so can we. So they do have distinctive voices when they produce this particular call.
Well, that would be one loud loon yodeling. It's an interesting sound.
It is, and it's one that takes quite a bit of energy to produce. A male loon that is yodeling will usually put his head down near the surface of the water, and then his body just resembles almost like a fireplace bellows. He's moving so much air through his vocal tract to produce that sound. But the sound sprays across the water. And the primary function, we believe, is that it is a territorial call, and essentially the message is, you better get out of here, or you could be in big trouble.
In human terms, it's kind of interesting. It's tough, for instance, to recognize someone's speaking voice, but if someone famous starts to sing, you recognize the voice, and this is kind of like that.
Yeah, exactly. The ability to recognize a particular song or call in a number of different species of birds is important, especially when, you know, about territorial boundaries. Humans can put up a sign,
sure,
no trespassing, that's easily understood by other humans, but loons don't have that luxury, of course. So the voice is what serves as the warning. Intruders will not be tolerated, and they might even risk injury, physical injury, from the owner of that particular territory. That call really contains a lot of information about age, identity, and readiness to defend.
Shortly, we're going to listen to the final recording, which is a chorus. Are loons smart enough to impersonate each other, or do they not have that ability? They're just who they are.
That's still an open question. It's possible that one thing that adult male loons will do once their chicks hatch is yodel, literally, in the face of their young chicks as a possible means of imprinting that sound on their offspring.
Wow.
So that when it comes time 4 or 5 years down the road and those chicks are finally of breeding age and are returning to the area where they originally hatched, they will know whether or not dad is still around and will know better than to try to make incursions on dad's territory. So there is that period of separation, and again, it's possible that the imprinting mechanism is at work there.
Fascinating. Here's a chorus. Now, by labeling it chorus, does that mean we're just listening to a bunch of all of them?
Yes.
And that's literally real-time recorded? I mean, loons were doing different stuff at the same time, or did you make this up?
No, that's a real recording.
Really?
Yeah. And
so there must have been a lot of loons around there.
In the location where that particular recording was made, well, I was there with my recording equipment on a large lake that had, I think, 3 pairs of loons. There was another lake not too far away that had its own territorial pair, and then several other lakes, the fainter sounds within that chorus were coming from, you know, adjacent lakes as well. So it was just a matter of distance from my microphones in terms of which loons in that population could be heard in the recording.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they do this fairly frequently. In fact, that was the focus of my dissertation research, was to sort of figure out what was going on with loons at night. They're notorious for their nocturnal calling patterns, but no one had really looked for those patterns or analyzed the call types that were occurring during chorus and so on. So I spent several summers swatting mosquitoes, staying up all night long, and listening to loons, you know, to answer questions about this communal vocal behavior.
Wow. You know, this is fascinating to me, and I could talk the whole hour about this stuff. I think what we'll have to do is have you on again. We've covered our lunacy, I guess, as you could say. You go out and put on programs about this stuff, yes?
Occasionally, sure.
Yeah.
My interest in bird sounds in general gives me lots of fodder for those sorts of presentations. But, of course, I love talking about loons, you know, pretty much all night long.
Yeah. I can guarantee you we'll have you on again. And thank you for taking time with us today. We will listen to loons entirely differently now, thanks to you.
Thank you very much, Al. I appreciate the invitation to speak with you.
I'll say it again. Fascinating. I hope you found it the same. This is Spectrum West, living up to our first name, Spectrum, with the music, arts, and culture, even culture of the wild world that surrounds us. In western Wisconsin. Lauren Wentz from UW Barron County. She will be back. At the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls, Sunday at 2 p.m., it's Hearts in Harmony 5, highlighting harmonies of barbershop quartets from throughout the Chippewa Valley. Tickets at cvca.net and by phone at 726-9000. Don't miss the Clearwater Edible Book Festival, Saturday, February 15th at the Ellie Phillips Library in Eau Claire. Tuesday, the 11th, it's Writer's Read, Word for Word, 7 p.m. on the lower level. The website is ecpubliclibrary.info. Well, you know, it wouldn't be a complete show without a Jim Oliver connection, so let's make ourselves whole and hear about another stage performance that's probably getting ready for a dress rehearsal even as we speak.
Love, Loss, and What I Wore is a play written by sisters Nora and Delia Ephron, based on the 1995 book of the same name by Eileen Beckerman. Nora Ephron, who died in 2012, is known for such film screenplays as Sleepless in Seattle and When Harry Met Sally. Delia Ephron's screenplay include You've Got Mail and The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, along with several best-selling books. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will produce Love, Loss, and What I Wore this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and next Friday and Saturday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Here to talk about the show is the director, Jake Lindgren. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Hey, thanks, Jim.
Without giving up too much, the show is about clothes, so tell us about that.
It is. It really is an ensemble piece of five women who are telling various stories of different women. They're all playing different characters. And just these monologue stories of different experiences in life that I think most women will be able to identify with, and just kind of their relationship to the clothing that they wore during those times.
I found this interesting because this is the second show in a row that is all female cast at the Theater Guild.
Mm-hmm.
Steel Magnolias earlier, and then now this one, which I think is terrific because usually community theater is cursed with this problem of all kinds of talented women who can't find roles.
True
and,
story.
Whereas it's really tough to get guys to come out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And audition. So this is, I think, a good trend for them. The show is staged in Reader's Theater format. You know why that is or how that works?
You know, theater, going back to its original roots, is storytelling. And for me, directing it, that's what attracted me to this piece, is just the storytelling aspect of it. You don't need the blocking. You don't need the set changes. You don't need the set decoration. You at the heart, you just need to hear these stories. And there are different connections being made between characters and different voices being done by the actresses. So there is a little bit of role-playing going on, but really at the heart, it's just old-fashioned storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed a couple of different places I looked on at other productions, and some have had five characters, which, as I recall, what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one had six or seven. And so I gather it's possible to expand the cast of these shows.
You really could. There is a nice freedom there. You could even shrink it down if need be. Looking at the original cast, I was looking back at some YouTube interviews with the Ephron sisters and some of the cast members in New York. That was an ever-evolving list of A-list actresses. A lot of them brought their own stories to the table, and the Nora and Delia took those stories on themselves and added them to the piece.
So are there costumes and props, or is it pretty much a
You know, there's really not. These women are just kind of in contemporary cocktail attire, as if they're going out to a fancy dinner, and that's really all you need.
I think one production that I saw appeared to have, they were all sort of, I think the reviewer said they were all dressed alike. Is this what you guys do?
We've got a cohesive look going, but they're definitely not wearing the same outfits. There's not... they're not looking like the Supremes up there in the same dress. So,
okay. So who are the members of the cast?
We have Rosanna Bijan, Kim Butnick, Karen Fenimore, Rhiannon Schaub, and Natalie Layton.
Mm-hmm. These have all have been around Theater Guild productions before.
Correct. Well, with the addition of Natalie and Rhiannon, who have made... made their way through the local area or the local theater scene, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But this is both of their first Theater Guild experiences.
He is Jake Lindgren, who is director of Love, Loss, and What I Wore, a production at the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. Well, this is the first play you've directed for the Theater Guild. What else have you done?
Directing-wise, mm-hmm. I actually started my own company called Downstage Left here in Eau Claire last summer, and we did a piece called The Shape of Things by Neil LaBute.
Mm-hmm.
I've also directed a one-act or a short play at the university, which I will be also doing again this semester as well, so it's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
With the Theater Guild, I've done performing for many, many years and a lot of costuming roles as well.
Now, as I recall... you were in the very first production that the Theater Guild did at the Grand Theater.
It was.
Which was then called the Grand Little Theater.
Correct.
I'm a little jealous of that. when I was in high school, I was in the next to the last play given in the old gymnasium, and then I was in the second play given at the new gymnasium. So I've always been number two.
Uh-huh.
So anybody who is number one, I'm very, very envious. So it sounds like quite a deal.
It was fun to be a part of.
Tell me about what you have in mind for your own theater company. That you're
I am exploring the idea of doing smaller ensemble pieces that focus on contemporary works and kind of exploring the gray emotions that we all experience in life. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, we've got a lot of comedy and musical options here in town to either be a part of ourselves as performers or witness as an audience, but there's not a lot of smaller dramatic works mm-hmm. to explore. So
now, Love, Loss, and What I Wore is a benefit of sorts. You want to tell us about that?
It is. One of the Efron sisters, I believe it was Delia, or was it Nora? I should know this, but I confused the two of them, passed away in 2012.
That was Nora, yes.
That was Nora, okay. Of cancer, and so we are doing a benefit for the American Cancer Society. Excuse me, with a portion of our ticket sales going towards them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been visiting with Jake Lindgren, who is director of Love, Loss, and What I Wore. The show opens Friday and plays Saturday and Sunday, and next Friday and Saturday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. For ticket information, call 715-832-PLAY. Jake Lindgren, thanks for coming in to talk to us.
No problem. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony. Popular melodies, movie music, and show tunes abound in the concert American Music Through the Years, Saturday, February 8th at the State Theater. Details at 832-6366 or at cvsymphony.org.
Spectrum Memo this evening, Thursday the 6th. The UW Eau Claire Music and Theater Arts Department presents a guest artist / faculty recital featuring brothers Carlos Paul Rondon on viola and UWEC's Tulio Rondon on cello. It starts at 7:30 in the Gantner Concert Hall. And again, that's Thursday night. That's tonight if you're listening to the Thursday variety of Spectrum West. Remember, Spectrum West repeated Friday evenings at 7 on the News and Classical Music Network stations in western Wisconsin. Well, if you live in the Ladysmith area, Friday night, the Flambeau Valley Arts Association, which, by the way, is enjoying its 42nd season, presents None for Fun, Movie Bingo, in the auditorium at Ladysmith High School. To get a look at the association and the event, we got Matthew Hanneman, an FVAA board member, and Vicky Quade, the originator of the Nuns for Fun show, together on the telephone. Hanneman from Rice Lake and Quade from Chicago. I noted on the website that the Flambeau Valley Arts Association was created by a group of residents, quoted, interested in the arts. It's managed by an all-volunteer board. Some locations, some organizations are finding volunteers harder and harder to come by. How about the Flambeau Valley Arts Association, Matthew? Going strong.
Yeah, we are currently. We currently have about 12 people on our board of directors. I am the second newest. Our newest member joined this year. I joined in 2010. 8 to 10 have been on there for almost a decade now. There's a core group that have really been moving the Flambeau Valley Arts Association forward.
And since you are one of the newer members, talk a bit about what enticed you to become a member of the board.
People found out that I was a theater major from Hamline University, and so they approached me and asked if I would be willing to participate in this organization. And I really just kind of jumped at the chance. I'd been out of theater for a number of years, and the arts are important to me and important for me to bring to my children. It's nice to bring in these great groups and individuals who come in to really entertain us.
In your rather short tenure, what has been the most pleasant surprise as you watch these cogs turning?
Well, it's a great group of people, first off. Some of the groups we get in, I am very surprised, bringing in Vicky for Nuns for Fun, and we just had Heather Massey, who is a part of the Waylon Jennies.
Yeah, you know, and I was looking back at your website. It goes back to the 90s, people that you've welcomed You've had, as you said, some impressive visitors. Milwaukee Symphony, Tonic Sol Fa has been there a couple times, other metropolitan ensembles. You know, some groups might balk at appearing at an auditorium of a high school system within a town of 3,500 residents, but I guess the reputation of the Flambeau Valley Arts Association makes that happen.
I think it does. Being in such a community as Rusk County, I think a lot of groups look at what the demographics there and see a need to bring in this kind of entertainment. I think it also benefits us being as close to Eau Claire. We work quite closely with the Heide Center. When they're in the area, we can kind of be a circuit for some of these groups.
On the phone with us, Matthew Hanneman. He is a member of the board of directors of the Flambeau Valley Arts Association. Also joining us from Chicago is Vicky Quadi, and she is part of What's Coming Next. Now, one thing that's happened, Vicky, in theater and in film is that nuns have emerged from the convent and have been kind of entertaining. The Sound of Music, The Flying Nun was on TV in the late 60s, sister act movies. Nonsense, I noted, is over 30 years on stage. Did you know that Nonsense started as a line of greeting cards?
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. And now Nuns for Fun, and since it's a menagerie of things, I'll let you describe it.
Well, Nuns for Fun is the umbrella group that has several different shows that we offer for entertainment, school and church fundraisers, theaters, and whatnot. One of the shows that I'm bringing to Flambeau is my show, Movie Bingo, Good, Bad, or Condemned. And it is a show that I appear in, and I am a character called Mrs. Mary Margaret O'Brien. She's a former nun who now heads the Archdiocese bingo fundraising department.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the premise of the show, so that we're going to talk about movies, play some bingo, have some fun, and raise a little money. It's really a great, fun show.
It says fun, prizes, and interesting bingo cards. What makes the bingo cards interesting?
Well, the bingo prizes are interesting. The cards themselves are the ones that have the little windows that you push over.
Uh-huh.
But what's more interesting than the cards are the configurations on the cards. We just don't play regular bingo.
People who are good at trivia, this is a good idea for them to show up.
Trivia, but people who like bingo, who have some knowledge of religion, I suppose. And the nice thing that we've discovered, my original show is Late Night Catechism, and that has been an international hit. Appeals, I would say, mostly to a Catholic crowd. But the bingo shows that I do, including Movie Bingo, have a broad appeal. Catholics, of course, but we have, you know, a large number of Jewish people come to our shows. That I find really interesting. So I'm hitting on all sorts of different wavelengths, and
okay.
That's a tremendous amount of fun.
Just for perspective, what are some of the other Nuns for Fun shows that are out there?
Well, every weekend at the Royal George Theater in Chicago, we do a late-night catechism and Bible bingo. And Bible bingo is kind of the mother superior of the bingo show. This coming weekend, I've got someone doing Sunday school cinema outside of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing movie bingo in Ladysmith. Another one of my actresses is doing movie bingo in Youngstown, Ohio. The next weekend, I'm going to be doing Saints and Sinners bingo.
Wow.
We are all over the place.
Tell me about your entertainment background.
My background's in journalism.
Ah.
That is what I got my degree in. And I worked as a journalist for years for daily newspapers, and I worked for a number of years as a correspondent for Newsweek magazine. And I started doing Q&As, working with the spoken word. I really enjoyed working with it, and then I started enjoying creating the spoken word. And I took my religious background, taught by the Dominican nuns, raised in a very Catholic household. And I used that to create the show Late Night Catechism. And once I saw that there was this need for exploring religion in our society, I just started creating a ton of other different shows. I have about a dozen different shows now, all with a religious theme.
And how long have you been doing this?
It's over 20 years now.
This isn't just for Catholics, obviously. But, you know, in western Wisconsin with the Norwegians, and of course in Minnesota as well, a lot of Lutherans, but everybody of all those denominations that you alluded to has heard stories of nuns from Catholics.
You can't get away from nuns in our society.
No. Although there were times years ago when some people wanted to get away from nuns. Especially if they went to a parochial school back in the day.
It isn't that you wanted to get away from nuns. You wanted to get away from the ruler.
That's true.
Not only do you hear stories from your Catholic friends, but you see nuns. You see them in movies. You see them on television. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't have a nun, you at least had a strong female teacher.
Exactly.
So you understand what having a strong woman in your life is like.
That's true. And you know what's tough today is you can't spot them anymore.
Well, you can if you know what to look for.
I always thought it was the handkerchief stuffed up your sleeve. Matthew, you have three events remaining after this weekend's extravaganza. Can you give us a little bit of a preview?
Yeah, we have Ring of Kerry coming up March 1st. They're a Celtic music and dance group that seem to have quite a following. We've had some telephone calls about them already. Intersection is a crossover string trio. That is on March 1st. And on April 3rd, we have Harmonious Whale and Gonzala Bergara Quartet. They are influenced by Django Reinhardt from the 1930s and 40s. He played a form of gypsy guitar that is quite exhilarating.
Well, I hope everybody within earshot of this program and everyone within miles and miles and miles around Ladysmith take advantage of what the Flambeau Valley Arts Association offers. Matthew and Vicki, thanks so much for being with us on Spectrum West. Remember, it's Nuns for Fun, Movie Bingo, and it's this Friday night, 7:30, Ladysmith High School. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You can go online for tickets and details at flambeauvalley.com/FVAA. Or if you don't have time to gather info, just gather the family or favorite person, and you can get tickets at the door.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of Love, Loss, and What I Wore runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Last of the Dragons, a production of the Falls Players, will play Friday through Sunday at the Lunda Theater in Black River Falls. Student performances of The Three Billy Goats Gruff, a production of the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond, will be presented through February 21st. Elvis, Essence of the King, featuring George Thomas, plays weekends and selected weekdays at the Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show runs through March 2nd. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. That's going to wrap it up for Spectrum West, folks, for today. Next week, we're taking you inside the Special Collections and Archives Department at UW Eau Claire. We're going to visit the vault, the home of many priceless volumes, including the remarkable Robert Frost collection that recently retired there. In the meantime, give yourself and those you love a gift of the arts and let your curiosity get the best of you, like we do every week here on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Have a great rest of the day. A nice weekend. Lord knows there's a lot you can do. See you next Thursday and Friday.